The Devin Nunes Podcast separates fact from fiction. Stay informed. Download the Devin Nunes Podcast today. Available for free at iTunes.
Hey there, welcome back to the Devin Nunes Podcast, here with Victor Davis Hansen from his farm in the San Joaquin Valley, surrounded by almond trees. Victor, on part one, where we covered basically the first half of your book, we talked about Trumpism, what it was, and the establishment and what they had been doing. I want to start off with an example of how you start to get through the book and explain, really, and make the case for Trump, but I think it's a very good example. We talked about China in the last part. But I also want to talk about NATO, because the president, as a candidate, was very negative on NATO. And of course, that turned into a little bit to Russiagate fiasco, where people said, oh, look, he's anti-NATO, he's pro-Trump. That was taken out of context. What he really said was, is I think people went to him and said, hey, countries are supposed to put in 2% of their GDP. They were only putting in 0.5%. The best countries were only a little over 1%. Very few were at 2%. One of the things that's happened now is he says, look, right when he got in, you've got to get to your 2%. He gave his instructions to the Department of Defense and the State Department, you've got to get to your 2%. People laughed at him, people attacked him. But I will say, we now have more people getting up to their 2%, more countries of the NATO countries getting up to their 2% than ever before. Is this an example of what you've talked about and how Trump is really changing Washington and why there is a case for Trump?
Yeah, I think it is. For the book, I read, I think, four of his books, The Art of the Deal, The Art of the Comeback, How to Make a Billion or something. And they're all the same as far as the technique. You create a ruckus and you demand the sky. And so you say, we might not get it. We might not stay in NATO. You know, it's 70 years. Who knew? We're paying. You exaggerate. And then the person gets worried. And then they start negotiating and you act kind of crazy. And then if they pay 55% of the deal, then you go back and say, see what I did. And it's been very successful with NATO because, as you say, we have more members. I think the aggregate investment's $100 million more. But people criticize him because he almost threatened to leave NATO. And the same thing with Little Rocket Man in North Korea. And the same thing with China, that we're using the tariff. But my question to the people who were critics, if you think NATO should pay more, or China was cheating or infringing on patent and copyrights, or North Korea shouldn't point a missile in theory at San Francisco, what are the levers of persuasion that you have? I don't know any. Barack Obama said that you guys in NATO are free riders. And they didn't do anything. And people had all said, China can't do this. But unless you threaten them with tariffs, you have no lever. And people were angry that he used these levers, but all the prior presidents of both parties had been sober and judicious, six-party talks, agreed framework, and they don't work.
And I was shocked when he went to Germany, went to a meeting. And of course, Germany's the most powerful economy in Europe. And he really called them out. You're putting in 1%. Of your commitment to NATO. And worse than that, you're going to buy gas with a new pipeline from Russia. You're already buying gas. Now you're going to be totally relying on gas because you're shutting down your nuclear power plants. You're shutting down your coal plants because of the global warming, climate change hysteria. And what you're really doing is you're feeding the beast in Russia. You're giving Putin the money to build the weapons and the weapon systems to attack NATO. And, you know, this has been going on for a long time. You have the former president of Germany that's actually working with the Russians. For the president, it's probably one of the things that I'm most proud about that he's done is really called them out, called them on the carpet, saying it to them directly. And of course, you had people, oh my gosh, he's, you know, threatening one of our allies, Germany. Well, look, that needed to be said.
It did. People forget that there's a problem with Germany. Of all the 27 EU nations, according to the Pew poll, they have the least regard for America. 52% think America is a positive. I think Putin is 47. So, and it was almost that way with Obama. So they're almost a neutral, at least as far as the population. And Trump understood that. And they're not popular with the Eastern Europeans who are scared of them and don't like their immigration. They're not popular with the Southern Europeans who feel that there's this financial dictate to them. They're not popular with the British on Brexit. They're the ones. I think they spend 1.3% GDP on defense. If they were to go to 2, everybody would follow them. If they stay at 1.3, because they run stuff. So for Trump to just zero in on Germany, he had a cunning that he thought, you know what? This is going to resonate because people in Eastern Europe, Southern Europe, and Britain don't like Britain, and they don't like Germany. And Germany's been very negative to us, and yet they're hypocrites. They got this $70 billion deficit that we run up with them. They have a surplus with us. They undermine NATO. They're cutting deals. Schroeder works for Gazprom. They're cutting.
Schroeder, then, I was trying to remember
Schroeder,
the name.
Yeah,
yeah.
And yep. They're. They need to be called
Gazprom,
out.
Gazprom is the Russian
and
oil company.
He called them out, and guess what? People snickered. They privately thought, oh, you can't do that. But privately, they were happy to see the Germany that they feared get their comeuppance. I think we have a real problem with Germany. I really do, because it's moving in a direction that it has in the last 100 years, and that's sort of aggregating power within Europe. And the EU is not really the EU anymore. It's really the German mercantile system, where they artificially use a lower EU currency for a mercantile system. Had they had the Deutschmark, it would be so high their trade would be symmetrical. So they do a lot of things that are not in the interests of the West, and they're very sensitive, they're very anti-American, and I'm really happy that Trump kind of, for the first time, said, you guys have to account for yourself.
So Victor, the classicist historian you is coming out in this interview talking about the history of Germany. And one of the things as you close out the book, you talk about, and I think you defined President Trump as a tragic hero. Can you talk about just a little history of where that comes from?
Yeah.
And then why you think he's a tragic hero?
Well, it comes from ancient Greece and Homer's Iliad, Achilles, Hector, but especially in the tragedian Sophocles. And it's somebody who has certain skill sets that can solve problems, but they have character defects. At least they're not completely civilizational. So when societies, and we see it on our own Western cinema, Shane, Magnificent Seven, High Noon, The Searchers, maybe your audience is not familiar with these classic Westerns, but I know they know of Dirty Harry or Taken in a modern context. So society looks toward, how do we solve the trade deficit? How do we deal with energy production? How do we get GDP? How do we get this and that? And they don't have answers. And then they turn and extremists to somebody who comes in that bothers them and takes care of business. We do it in military affairs with Curtis LeMay in World War II or George Patton, pretty uncouth guy. And then as they start to succeed, the people who brought them in are uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable. The rallies, the tweets, the Queen's accent, and the tragic hero then gets desperate for acknowledgement. You know, that great scene in The Magnificent Seven when they say, after they get rid of the bad guys and the village kind of wants them to leave, they said, I think it's Yul Brynner turns to Steve McQueen, said, we lose, we always lose. And he says to the old man of the village, well, the old man says, you know, they would thank you if they could. They really appreciate it. And they said, they really appreciate us leaving. And the same thing with John Wayne in The Searchers. He walks out. He saves the day, but he walks out. There's a great play by Sophocles called The Ajax, and most of it is the guy whining. Ajax, you know, I'm the best warrior. After Achilles died, I saved us. And yet they didn't give me the armor. They didn't give me what I deserved. I didn't get any ratings. This is unfair. It's terrible. And they try to tell him, well, you know, you're a little weird, so you make people feel uncomfortable. So they're, in a way, they're heroic, but it's tragic. They don't end well. And, you know, I don't think whether Trump, I hope he leaves office in 2024, but I don't think he's going to be considered a wise man like Obama or Clinton or George Bush, or at funerals where ex-presidents come. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll want to sit next to him. And that's going to be kind of tragic, because if you look at his actual economic and foreign policy record so far, it's better in his first 2.5 years than any president since Reagan, and maybe including Reagan.
Well, then imagine what he could have done without having to deal with this Russia fiasco.
That's a very good point.
The last couple of years.
That's a great point.
And in closing up here, I think I've heard you say this before, that Trump was kind of the antidote, that, you know, the rip off the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And he really has exposed, I would say, not any particular order, but he definitely has exposed the fake news media. And we've been dealing with these guys forever, always. Well, you have to talk to some of these media outlets because if not, you don't get your part of the story in, even knowing that they're going to write a 300, 400, 500, 600 word article. 90% of it's going to be against you, and they're going to put whatever quote where you're, you know, responding to their nonsense in the final 50 words. And I think one of the things that Trump has finally, I think, convinced conservatives and Republicans is that, you know, look, these guys are the enemy. And I don't think Trump saw these guys as the enemy originally, but he saw them turn on him. And then now he knows, and he basically, they used fake news. They tried to say it was Obama who used fake news to define why Trump won. And then it was funny that President Trump basically said, no, 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 you guys are all the fake news.
That's right. He started out as an NBC ratings booster, and he thought that he could charm them because he had been so successful, and they gave him all that free publicity in the primaries. And then they turned on him, and they used all of these pseudo news accounts, and when the case for Trump came out, I can't tell you how many left-wing liberal reporters called me up to do interviews, and yet what they printed didn't represent at all what we talked about.
Right.
And I guess what Trump brought out is it's been now the Kavanaugh hearings, that pseudo-circus or whatever it was. Then there was the Covington kids, the Jussie Smollett case, and now the Mueller investigation, and then the Barr redactions. So they create these psychodramas that have nothing to do with reality, and then they're refuted, and rather than being contrite, I'm apologetic, you know, Jussie Smollett, I shouldn't have jumped to the gun and said he was a victim. We shouldn't have said that this guy that confronted the Covington kids was a heroic Vietnam veteran. We shouldn't have said that this Miss Ford was absolutely factual and could prove her case, but we did. They don't do that. They just move on to the next one. And Trump, slowly, he's wounded, he's bleeding, he's torn up, mm-hmm. but he's grinding them down slowly. It's been very costly. And if anybody had said that their polls would be where they are now, nobody would have believed it 2.5 years ago. He's really, for a guy who's 72 years old and not in the greatest of shape and doesn't get sleep and gets up every morning and reads and is told that he's a crook, he's going to be impeached, he's going to be in jail, his family... It's absolutely amazing that he continues to fight back with that energy level.
I agree with you. The book is called The Case for Trump by Dr. Victor Davis Hanson. Victor, thanks a lot for doing this.
Thank you.
This is my second book review, and I hope you all enjoyed it. And we'll see you next time on the Devin Nunes Podcast.
Storm clouds been gathering so long, I don't know.
The darkness around us leaves no easy road.
We started wondering if every road dead ends our dreams.
Wind whips the dust up and rain's pouring down.
Good people struggling in every hometown.
We started wondering if we even matter at all. We'll take that hard road to happier days.
First trial by fire like this.
It's nothing hard work and family can't fix.
We've got the power to save it all here in our hands. We'll take that hard road to happier days. Cause we kept our American faith. Fight through the darkness.
declaring a purpose, we're already half the way there. We'll take that hard road to happier days, 'cause we kept our American faith.
Paid for by Devin Nunes Campaign Committee.